I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order. It is now 1:32 on Tuesday, February 10th in room 124. Members present include Representative Stutes, Representative Garrett Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Representative St. Clair. Co-Chair Eichheit will be here fairly soon, and myself, Co-Chair Carrick. And we've also been joined today by Representative Himshute, who represents Southeast Alaska, and so welcome to our conversation today. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business, and please take this time to silence your cell phones. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records and Doug Bridges from the Juneau LIO for staffing our committee today, as well as our committee aides Meredith Trainer and Griffin Sukeo. Thank you for your help. So on today's agenda, we do have a continuation from the committee's February 5th presentation on the function of the Alaska Marine Highway System Operations Board. Primarily today, we'll be focused on the Cascade Point project overview and updates from Craig Tornga, as well as our South Coast Region Director, Christopher Goins, with the Alaska Marine Highway System. And for advisement of members of the public that may be watching this presentation, we are starting today at slide number 10, which is titled AMHS 2045 Long Range Plan. And we'd be happy to skip back or forward for committee members' interest today. And we want to get through this presentation today, so we may accordingly adjust our time schedule here. Please welcome Commissioner Anderson. Thank you for being here today, and Director Tornga. And we do have Christopher Goins online. So thank you all if you'd like to come and. Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you for being here. Welcome, and feel free to put your names on the record and go ahead and start the presentation at slide 10.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick, and the Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Continuing on with our presentation here, this slide really is about the AMHS 2045 long-range plan and in relation to the road connections piece of it. And this was something that, you know, as folks, you know, Director Tornga was directly involved with the work on that plan, really trying to make sure that, you know, as they went through to have, you know, I think it actually was a really significant effort and accomplishment to have a 2045 long range plan for AMHS. And one of the things about it was, you know, efficiency and cost savings for the future. And that's where these road connections come in. And what the plan said is really work with DOT to evaluate the feasibility of the following road connections: Cake to Petersburg, across Baranoff Island, and then Tenneke to Huna. And those were three that were specifically called out. In addition, that there, you know, this work on Cascade Point also, you know, fits into this concept, this planning level concept of, you know, longer road connections, shorter ferry runs. And so that project also is mentioned in this plan, and it's not listed as one of these, but it is a project that's acknowledged as it's in progress.
And we're going to pause here, and I'm going to ask Representative Himshute. Sorry.
Representative Rebecca is good. That's what they call me back home. Thank you, Chair Carrick, and thank you for the opportunity to join the committee today. I really appreciate this is a really central issue in my district. So through the chair, I was a little bit shocked at this slide, Commissioner, and I just am hoping that you can provide a little more context on these public comments in support of roads. When you say they were generally supportive, that isn't what I heard in the meetings I attended. And so was that addressed in a specific meeting talking about roads? Because there were so many meetings that I guess I'm a little bit lost because I didn't hear it, but maybe I wasn't in the same meeting. So how could we quantify that a little bit better?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Himshute. This statement is just word for word from the plan, but I'll let Director Tornga speak to that. He was involved in many of the discussions.
Okay. Yeah, for the record, Craig Tornga, Marine Director for AMHS, and through the chair for Representative Himshute. We held several ferry focus group meetings. We actually also held some meetings in CAKE, and the comments when we proposed these, depending on what village or community we were in. Mm-hmm. So I would say that there was definitely on either side of the issue when we were talking in Puna and Tenneke. Mm-hmm. Sitka, there's a push for a road to the east side from Sitka, and there's actually been monthly meetings with MARAD that's been leading the meetings mm-hmm. with the Sitka tribe, and I've attended probably six of those meetings that they're working on that, trying to find funding for that. So I can't say that the whole community is, but the meetings that I've been in, that MARAD has facilitated, and they've been doing them monthly. There is a push for that. And for us, on trying to make the ferries more efficiently, if you look at Chatham Straits, that's like a highway. That's a marine highway, and anything we can bring to that, just we can hit a lot of communities just by going up and down that instead of all the running we have to do. So it really does, for the future, make the ferries a lot more efficient.
Follow up? Thank you, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, I just want to point out I was in touch with the tribe yesterday, and there's new leadership. The council has new leadership, and the tribe itself has a new executive director. And I would invite you to, I know the plan is done, but I would invite you to have a full meeting in Sitka, not just with the tribe, and include the tribe, because the tribal voice is incredibly, it's essential. We need to have that voice. But I don't think you're going to find the same findings right now in the tribe. Did you have a meeting with the entire community of Sitka to arrive at that conclusion? A 16-mile road with tunnels and gravel over ice in the winter, who's maintaining that? What's at the other end? Like, how does this work? I see if you're just wanting to, I'm sorry, but I'm going to get a little wound up here. If you're just wanting to reduce travel time on the ferry, and if we have more efficient ferries, you know, that may not be as burdensome as you think, but if you're just looking to reduce travel time, that logically may look like, let's just put a road in here, but I don't believe my community is speaking in full support at all about making this road. This is a 20-some-year-old plan. We didn't even have cell phones back when this plan was written that suggested these roads. So I'm not convinced at all, as somebody from that community, that what you're saying matches the will and the desire of the community. So do you have resolutions from the assembly? I need a little more substantiation before I can buy into it. We are people of the tides. We deal with surges and narrows all the time. What we don't do is take an elder who's trying to get to Search Hospital and drop them off in an uninhabited place and say, good luck getting over to Sitka. So I'm very concerned about this conclusion.
All right. For the record, Craig Tarnga, through the chair, to represent Hemshoot. I just mentioned that we had ferry focus groups, and we held them quarterly, and we did have a lot on there. Now, we didn't recommend a road, a certain road. We just recommended a road across. So we're not taking a position on a road. We just mentioned a road across would help. And then, like I said, I've been attending the MARAD meetings regarding this as well. I don't think we've had one since there's been recent leadership change, so I can't speak to that. I just did about half a dozen meetings with them on it. And it's more than just the routing. It's trying to make this system more efficient and affordable for the future. And right now we do not get the service we'd like to give to Sitka, and it's just, you know, the 1 week, and it's not a true round trip, and it's very difficult. So we're just looking at ways to try to improve that service and make this more efficient.
One small follow-up.
One more follow-up.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm just going to say what makes it more affordable for the state does not make it more affordable, nor does it make it safer for the people. So we have to think about those other values here, not just the time and not just the fuel expense. So thank you. Okay.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate it. First, let me make sure I'm not jumping the gun here, but is this road in conjunction with the Cascade Point Road?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes. No, it is not. This would be a separate road. I mentioned last time you can kind of compare this to what was done in Metlakatla when they built the 15-mile road, and it just made it that they had better service getting there, and they weren't having to go around the point into the weather, and so it gave them a better service with that type of setup.
Paloma? So it would be from where to Sitka?
It would be, excuse me, through the chair, Representative Stutz, it would be to the east side of Baranoff Island, whichever location, I don't know. They've looked at, from what the tribe said in the meetings, they've got like three different routes that they've proposed at times. Yes, and so it would be just one of those roads that would get them to the east side and put them in Chatham Straits where we're going up and down all the time.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So this would be leaving the Auk Bay ferry dock?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutz. Yes, it'd be from Auk Bay, just like the runs we make to Hoonah, and then down Chatham Straits to Angoon and Cake. So we're going up and down that highway already.
I'll wait. Thank you.
Okay. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Carrick. So, Director, I'd like to flesh out some things that Representative Himshut said. So what's the medical facilities on a ferry? In other words, do you have a doctor on a ferry for an elderly person that has an issue? Or I know you guys are probably trained, but what's the facilities on a ferry?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McCabe. Yeah, we do have EMT-type training that's actually required for our pursers on board, and we do have a hospital room on board for medical situations. So we're more of the EMT-type training.
Follow up. Thank you. So suffice to say that if an elder, as Representative Himshut's worried about, was on a ferry and had an issue, you would have to probably get a helicopter out of Sitka to medevac them if they had some sort of a big issue similar to what they might have in a remote 16-mile road that probably could get an ambulance to it quicker than the Coast Guard could launch?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative McCabe, that would be the scenario. And we have had some where we've had to run them ashore in a fast rescue craft and when we need to get them to a medical center.
Thanks. And one more follow-up, Chair, if you don't mind.
One more follow-up.
Thank you. So this road to the other side of Sitka would utilize, hopefully, the $75 million road we've already started out to Catlin Bay before it goes around that I think 50% of Sitka was in favor and 50% was not in favor, and yet we still put $75 million into it.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McCabe, like I said, we didn't take a position on which road. We just, if there was a road that got to the east side, we would be able to give regular service to Sitka that we're not able to today.
Thanks.
So I put myself in the queue, and I kind of want to go back to slide 10 really quick, just so we are keeping ourselves sort of on track here. But for all of the projects that are in the long-range plan where we've got existing logging roads and we're building new roads, can you compare the total cost to build those roads versus how many years of just regular maintenance would that provide us for the current marine vessels we have? And I'm just trying to compare costs.
Representative Carrick, we don't have that analysis, and in the long-range plan, we took the position that we're just recommending the roads. We're not the road experts, so we recommend to the DOT to look at these. And I think when Director Goins is up here, he might be able to answer a little bit of that. But there's definitely, an ongoing cost of a ferry. Once you have to build one, you're going to be operating for a number of years. So that has to be compared as well.
And as a follow-up, it's my understanding a lot of the roads being proposed, including even the one to the Cascade Point project, are at different levels of readiness for what people would think of as a road that you would travel to get to a ferry terminal. Some of these are just a couple of ruts going through the woods over an island with mountains and trees. So I'm correct in stating that we're not talking about equivalent types of readiness for roads. We've got a lot of work to do on some of these areas, and in others we have other kinds of work to do, such as Cascade Point, where we have to do a lot of new bridge and tunnels, et cetera. So I guess that's more of a comment. I'm just trying to remind, I guess, all of us looking at this. And I'd like the commissioner's perspective about the cost for these road projects and the maintenance and operations of the road projects versus just increasing the amount of ferry service we have.
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick, thank you for that question. For the record, Ryan Anderson. And, you know, just to address the Cascade Point Road, I mean, you're from Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And when we get out on our Priority 4s, like, you know, I live on a Priority 4 road. And I've driven out to Cascade Point. That road is in better shape than the road I go home on every night. And the volumes are much greater on the road that I go home on every night. So to get to that point in Cascade Point where you get to the end of the road on the Glacier Highway, which is, I think it's like mile 41 or 42, that is good road. Then from there, you get on the Gold Belt property. That's where you need the bridge, and you need to get down to the site, and it's less than a mile. I mean, it's a short segment. I've walked down it. I've seen it. So just to clarify on that point, when it comes to roads, I mean, you see in the 2004 Southeast Alaska Plan, that was Mike Barton as commissioner. I think Frank Murkowski as governor. I mean, back then, I think they were facing some tough fiscal times, and this seems to come up with the ferry system, you know, every time we kind of go around, I think, on the tough fiscal challenges when we get into those climates. I had a letter on my desk from Commissioner, former commissioner. But anyways, when I started, and it was a letter about, hey, you're going to get into tough times in the ferries, you know, look at the longer roads, the shorter ferry connections. This is just something, it keeps coming around and it keeps coming around. So we really welcome the debate on this. Because I do think this is something, you know, there's been a lot of work done in the past. You see it in the Southeast Plan where they actually, the 2004 plan is our current approved. That was the last time it was officially approved. You can see all the work they did in looking at routes and everything. the cost of roads, it really depends where you're at. You know, depending on the material availability. I think in Southeast Alaska, we did that recent road out in Cake where we went heading towards Petersburg. We only got partway. We got across the island. To the coast there, and so we have some good examples there where, you know, we're doing things to keep the cost down. How we build bridges is a little different, and how we do these things to get that basic access in, and then knowing that, you know, if that, just like any road project, if the volume picks up and the demand picks up, we expand the road, we build out the road. So it is a function. We use the same road principles whether we're building roads to between rural communities or to, you know, ferry connections. The one thing about roads, and I'll use an example from up north, you know, the one that I was involved with back in 2006, 2008, it was called the Road to Tanana. It was from Manly Hot Springs. We took some old mining roads, and then we built new road to get to the Yukon River. If you went and talked to those folks in Tanana right now, they would tell you, man, we cannot survive without that road, because in the wintertime they build an ice road on the Yukon River. They're moving all their goods. It just brings down costs dramatically. So the roads, you know, from that perspective, are very positive economically. When we're looking at that balance between, you know, the cost of a ferry, it's also, you know, I view it as the time of a person. You know, if you can reduce the time you have to be on the ferry by hours, I mean, I see that as a value as well. So, and then, of course, we're looking at fuel consumption. We're looking at, you know, greenhouse gas emissions. All those things are positive benefits to reducing that ferry run. So the other thing I would just say, when we're looking at the cost of building things, you know, the capital programs, we can't use capital money to run operations. So when we invest in roads, you know, we're making that selection from across the state of our capital programs and where we can see the benefit. And it's not, it's tough to try to say, well, if we build a road for $10 million, how does that tie to a reduction in operating costs? Because that's just a difference of parameters on that as well.
And I guess one more follow-up for myself, Commissioner, is I'm really struggling when we talk about the Cascade Point project and a few of these other proposed items to understand how, from that statewide perspective, we're investing the amount of money we're investing into these projects versus some of the priority four roads you identified even in northern region. So why this? I'd like this money if it were Queen for a day to stay in Southeast and be reinvested back into the Marine Highway system in some way. But when you talk about there being controversy and welcoming the dialogue, it doesn't seem to jive with the fact that dollars are already dedicated towards this project. So the discussion seems to be sort of moot and after the fact. And I'm just curious, on a statewide perspective, why this project over some of the projects that exist throughout the rest of Southeast or that exist in other parts of the state. When you mentioned the road to Tanana, I think that's a really valuable example of the kind of thing we could have spent the funding on, which benefited directly a community, versus I'm unclear who this project is directly benefiting.
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick. Yeah, from our perspective, from the DOT, the agency perspective, I mean, one of our missions is to, you know, bring down operational efficiency. I think you heard Director Torga speak to it. And so we're constantly looking for ways for operational efficiency. One way is to invest in new vessels, like the Tuscany replacement vessel is going to be a great thing for us to bring down costs. but there's only so much of those types of funds for replacing vessels. When we look across the system and the operating efficiency by building roads, we feel there's a significant benefit. I think, you know, and so we're constantly balancing that across the state. We're also balancing a mix of fund types. So we can't use the funds we used for Tanana Road would be different than the funds we would use for building a ferry terminal. So there's that balance as well that we're constantly going through. But, you know, we're investing across the system right now. It's not just Cascade Point. I think we had between 10 and 12 ferry terminal projects that are active, that are funded, that across the state we're working on. And what we're doing is we're trying to build the system for the efficiencies, you know, the ability for all of our vessels to hit all of our docks, to really, you know, strengthen that system. And from that system perspective is where Cascade Point was fitting in.
Let's take a couple more questions, and then just for time management purposes, I'd like for Commissioner, for you to skip ahead to slide 17 after that, because that's what gets right into the Cascade Point, and I think it's not duplicative of what we just heard in subcommittee as well. I have Representative McCabe, and then Himshute, and then Stutes, I believe.
Thanks, Commissioner. So I remember reading a study a number of years ago that compared the, you know, in the airline industry, we do seat miles. You know, that's how you figure out the number of seats on an airplane versus the amount of time traveled, dividing the fuel costs and the cost of the crew and everything else. And the ferry system was about $5 plus almost $6 per car mile. So if you plan just the number of cars hauled, not people necessarily, it was $5 or $6 per car mile. As a contrast, driving the Glen Highway was 2 cents per car mile. So that's the kind of study we need to do. And I think that's what you're trying to tell us, is we are going to be saving. The DOT is not only saving money, but we're also going to be saving wear and tear on the ferry. We already put an incredible amount on the Tustamina, especially. We already put an incredible amount of hours, if you will, on a vessel that wasn't designed. I think its life design is 30 years, and we've had to beg the Coast Guard every year since then to extend its life. So this would also save, if I'm not mistaken, having an extra 30 miles or whatever it is to drive would save that wear and tear, and it would save our asset for a longer period of time. It would allow better scheduling. I mean, I get that it's going to be an inconvenience to people that have to drive or take the bus. I understand Gold Belt has offered to provide a bus from Juneau. I understand all that, but it would also be a significant cost savings, and I think we have a report from Ed King that sort of indicates that. Well, You can roll your eyes at any of them that do economic reports, right? But I think that's what Representative Carrick was talking about, is she doesn't understand why we need a ferry terminal at Cascade Point. And I think maybe we're talking past each other, because I think I hear you saying nobody benefits except the state, who saves a pile of money on the ferry. Is that – am I correct with that?
Yeah, through Chair Carrick. Representative McCabe. Yeah, it's I mean, you hesitate to go into the economics of it because, you know, we're state government, and so we do things more than just that seat fare, you know. And so that's a piece of it. I think when we do the economics analysis, yeah, we can argue all day about, you know, the assumptions made and those types of things. When we look at roads and you start building roads, naturally, I mean, you'll see more people traveling and more development. I mean, there's this natural piece that happens with shorter ferry routes. I mean, saving people time. I don't want to. I think there's a huge value in people's time. And by, you know, a road, you know, you can run 50, 60 miles an hour. On a ferry, we're running, 15 knots if we're really fast.
13, 14 down here.
Yeah. And so just that ability to move, you know, faster. And I think if you looked across the nation at the ferry systems, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see roads with short ferry connections where they had to have them. Just from that, it's people's time. It's the cost savings of the system, the efficiency of the system, and there's all sorts of ancillary benefits with fuel savings and environmental benefits.
Follow up.
Thanks.
So I've been doing a little research on this since the last time, and I looked at, I think you had a slide that kind of looks like this that shows all the investments that you put into. So I'm looking at Chenega. We're going to spend $15 to $20 million on a terminal for a population of 54 people. To Titlick, $10 to $15 million on a terminal for a population of 23 people. Cold Bay, 153 people, full-time residents. I get that there's a bunch of stormies that go in there occasionally, but $50 to $55 million. Here we're going to spend some money on a road that's pretty much already built for the most part. I mean, we've got a mile to go and we've got a bridge. I don't think there's a tunnel, but maybe. In fact, I understand that the bridge can, because it's granite on both sides, or it's rock on both sides, can probably be a big culvert. Anyways, we're going to spend that amount of money on that, and this terminal would service all of Juneau, everybody going through Juneau, and I don't even really know what the population of Juneau is, but so it would service a lot of people that could drive out there and, like you say, save their time. The people in Chenega and Tetitlik and even Cold Bay don't have a choice necessarily. They have to use a ferry. We can make this easier and better for the people in Juneau that might have to use the ferry to go somewhere else by shortening the time that they're riding on the ferry. Am I off base? Am I being weird? I think this is... I mean, I love the ferry, don't get me wrong, but it's a pain in the butt. You got to load your car, you got to sit in the parking lot, you got to chain it down, you got to walk upstairs. Sorry.
Through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative McCabe. Yeah, first of all, there's no tunnel at Cascade Point. I like tunnels. If there was an opportunity, I worked 3 years underground at Greens Creek, so I don't mind tunnels. I think what you're getting at, Representative McCabe, is important. In that, if you look across the system, not just ferries, but rural airports, I mean, across the state, right, we're at 235 rural airports. Many of those are serving very remote communities. I mean, those are lifelines for people. There's no doubt about that. And so we do these things for that. The one thing with Cascade Point that I do believe is a benefit to rural communities is if you can enhance that Lynn Canal run and going north, and Auk Bay is serving those northern panhandle communities, you're going to see better service. Because we're not spending so much time with one vessel on the water. So there's just those types of ideas we want to keep open and we want to keep pursuing, because I think there's opportunities there to serve all the communities with this proposal and not just, you know, one.
Thanks.
We have quite a few questions in the queue now. I might limit people's follow-ups to just one or two follow-ups. Start with Representative Stutes, then Himshoot.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So... what I'm hearing is we think, DOT thinks, the Alaska Marine Highway System was created for Alaskans, not for DOT, but for people and their usage. And, you know, I don't like to see you lose sight of that. We pay to get on our highway system when we're using it. We pay additional, other than people getting on their roads. And you're talking about how important this is and what you think. Public comment. 622 comments came in, which, by the way, closed on January 9th and weren't posted until February 2nd, when we called and said, where are all the public comments? 92% of the people said, we don't want Cascade Point. And of the people that spoke to Cascade Point, the majority of them spoke to it because they want closer transportation to the mine that is owned by Canadians. This is a problem for me. You know, what is our objective in this? You're talking about saving money. That road's not built to carry big ore trucks back and forth. And that's what we're doing. We're facilitating the mine, and we're forgetting about all of the people that have said, we don't want to, and what about the property? I haven't seen anything. We don't own the property, but we're going to go and we're going to build a ferry dock out there on property that we don't own. Are we buying it? Is Gold Belt willing to sell it? If not, what is the rent that Gold Belt wants? We have a lot of unanswered questions for putting out $28.5 million already when a lot of our infrastructure could have used that.
I'm not sure if there was a question in there or not.
I think let's go to let's go to Representative Himshu, because I know you have to leave.
Thanks, Chair Carrick. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. And I want to clarify a few things for the record as far as a vote on the Sitka Road. It was a geo bond in 2012 or 13, so it was a statewide vote. And so it might have been 50-50 in Sitka, I don't really know, but it was a statewide vote. It was on a geo bond, and there's been no vote since then. And that road has been well over $70 million. So that's why I question, if 7 miles of road is $70 million, how much is 16 miles of road going to cost? When you drop an elder in the middle of winter at the end of a road where there is nothing, there's nothing, you are going to have to send a helicopter to get that person if they get left behind somehow. If somehow we miss one person, there is nothing there at the other end of the road. So that's something we need to consider when we talk about safety. When you compare the Alaska ferry system to other ferries in this country, I am not aware of another ferry system that does what ours does, and I am immensely proud of the people on our ferry system and the leadership of our ferry system for keeping a system going that does as much as it does. I don't know that we compare to anything else, so I want us to be careful with those comparisons. And then I just wanted to point out, you know, the shifting of the savings by taking people all the way around to Sitka or all the way to Pelican. These maps from 2004, if you live in Pelican or Tenneke, you're going to have to buy a car. There's only a boardwalk in either community. There's no car in Tenneke. There's one. They have a truck that they use for moving fuel. There's no car in Pelican. So why are we building a road to Pelican or Tenneke? And I know that we're not, and I know that you're looking at how can we make the system more efficient, but let's not lose sight of exactly what Rep. Stutz said. The service is there for the people. And in the winter when we need it most is when we're going to have the most problems with a plan like this. So I don't know if I had a question. I thought I did, but I think I lost it. So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. I also didn't really hear a question there, but we're going to just take a very brief at ease to turn the gavel back over to my co-chair, who is back from a bill hearing. At ease.
We are back on the record. And then just for the record, this is Representative Ted Eichheit. I think I came in here at 2:01 p.m. So and thank you to my co-chair, Carrick, for taking care of me in my absence. So Representative Mina, I think you are next in the queue.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, Eichheit. So we've had a pretty good discussion just talking about what are these hypothetical savings that we can see from reducing the vessel hours and building these roads. And so if we look at that October 15th Ed King report, there is a line that says that operationally Cascade Point would reduce vessel hours, projecting to save $743,000 per year. So I get the conceptual argument, but then if I just look down into the next page, it then says the long-term savings will offset capital and maintenance costs, not supported. Construction costs are unlikely to be recovered in a meaningful timeline without additional changes. And I haven't read every single word of the report. My understanding is that it also doesn't include the maintenance costs for the new facility. And so my question is, I don't see a lot of helpful argumentation that this is going to save money. And so are you saying that the project is to save money? Is it for streamlining and helping with the predictability of the system? Or is there a counter argument for this cost savings position?
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Anderson through co-chair Carrick, or sorry, co-chair Eichscheid.
Yes,
excuse me.
You.
Apologies. Representative Mina. Yeah, I think in some of the subsequent slides, we start going through some of the costs and the savings and those things. So if we could work through those in those presentations, I think that would help us kind of flow through it. But I think what you're hearing from the department, or what you're hearing from the department, is there's savings in time, there's savings in costs. Granted, the capital costs we're treating separately, you know, from that operational cost that we're looking at. There's environmental benefits like the carbon reductions, and then there's also this potential to improve service to the North Lynn Canal communities by that dedicated, or to the North Panhandle communities through the dedicated North Lynn Canal service.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question that I had is, and I had some others, but I'll just keep them as, I'll wait till they're in context. But on this particular slide 17, as you're talking about system optimization, shortening the routes by not, you know, so many nautical miles, could you explain the how much time that's actually going to save and what impact that would have on the size of crew that you may or may not need, or the number of crew that we may or may not need?
Okay.
Specifically with like the 12 to 14 hour requirement that is existing right now.
For the record, my name is Christopher Goins. I'm Regional Director of South Coast Region through the Chair Eichscheid to Representative Nelson. That's a wonderful question. From those that are traveling, the time frame is about an hour and a half each way going out of Cascade Point. You asked the question, a separate question, which has to do with, well, what about the operating hours, basically the 12 hours that the Coast Guard puts on our folks? And before you have to get in another crew. Because of the vessels going about 14 nautical miles and the current route that comes into play, which is in for Cascade Point, would be Cascade Point to Haines to Skagway and then back to Cascade Point, we just barely miss it. We'd have to be traveling 17 miles per hour. The thing that is changing, and it's talked about in the 2045 long-range plan, is that there is going to be shuttle service between Haines and Skagway. That shuttle service allows for the Juno or Cascade Point to Haines to get below that 12-hour requirement, and therefore we can get to that single crew. And when you do that, per the report, we originally had savings of approximately $590,000. We took out, because we were only looking at the routing up to Haines and Skagway, basically a labor savings on that route of about $1 million. Because you have that crew off. But that really is important with the shuttle service that is planned to come online in the future.
Okay. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So this is maybe an off-the-wall question. I know a number of years ago there was a push from the citizens of Cordova to have a ferry, different ferry schedule, and I think a couple representatives, my favorite among them, went to Cordova and had a meeting with 250 people that said that they wanted more ferry service to Kodiak, or to Cordova. Sorry, I gave it away. How much ferry service does Cordova use now? I mean, what's our fare box recovery from the people of Cordova? Are they actually using the ferry?
Christopher Goins for the record, through co-chair Eichheide to McCabe. We're hearing about 30% from my friend behind me, Mr. Torringa.
Thanks. So yeah, it was simple. I told you.
Okay. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Through the chair, who's going to provide the shuttle service?
Through Eichheide to Representative Stutes, Goldbelt has committed to that shuttle service. And I will just add that when we were going through the analysis, Ed King came back to me and he gave me an initial draft and it said, hey, you got a problem with walk-on passengers. As we dug into that, and I stopped it, I said, that's unacceptable. We can't have an issue with walk-on passengers. We had heard a lot from the community that there, you know, how this is going to be so much worse than it is at Ock Bay today. Well, the fact of the matter is we have people in the winter walking down Ock Bay on the shoulder where there's snow on the road, no sidewalks, poor lighting, all the way back to public transit over miles to get back to that point. And quite frankly, that's not great either. And we paused and we went and we had some conversations with CBJ representatives. We had conversations with Goldbelt and said, you've talked about this. I want you to commit to it because that matters to us. If we go through that process, then we can start really talking about what else can we do. There's always FTA funding out there that can support and supply funding mechanisms to make that system better and to do better than we are today. And I will say I'm quite proud of the fact that those conversations have started because it started a whole conversation about walk-on passengers to Ock Bay. That is great news because we've needed to have that. And now with that commitment, we're talking about Ock Bay to Cascade Point to the Mendenhall Valley Transit Center. And then you can go to the airport and anywhere else you need. And so we've turned this into an equity type of a discussion. How do we make it more equitable? How do we make it more appropriate for the folks that are here? And I think everyone in this room has had those kinds of questions. And that's what we're trying to turn this into.
Follow up. And I appreciate that. And I think it would be wonderful for the folks around here if they can afford it. Is the anticipation that with the ferries out in Cascade Point, that the walk-on price would increase?
You know, I wish I could answer that for you. I'm sorry, through the chair, to Representative Stutes. I wish I could answer that for you. Like I said, we're trying to figure out what that would need to be. What other mechanisms, what other things can we tie into with FTA funding, transit funding, that can make that a better service for folks? There's been the idea that's been thrown out of could we find a mechanism to work with Goldbelt and the ferry terminal, AMHS, to make it one rate for walk-on passengers. Those are all things that we're going to have to figure out, and we got time to figure that out. But that's why the public comment periods that we're going through, the ones we'll go through, and I'll detail much more further, and the steps that we're taking, is these are design considerations. These are operational considerations to make it better for the people. And I think a lot what you see in those public comments is a lot of fear of something new. And I take that as a challenge to make it better for them, to serve them better. And that's the way we're looking at it. That's the way my design team looks at it. So thank you.
Last question, Mr. Chair. Will we be seeing what the capital costs are anticipated to be, including the lease cost for Gold Belt, et cetera?
Yeah, Eichheide to Representative Stutes. I'm more than happy to tell you what that is. And we told AMHOB back, I told them what that capital cost was, construction cost. Contract we anticipate right now is going to be another $90 to $100 million for a construction capital cost. We don't make any bones about it, neither did Mr. King about the fact that the capital cost is not going to be recovered. This is about operational down the road. So to answer your question, Representative Mina, there was a secondary
right.
part to that. Sorry, help me out.
Thank you, through the chair.
Oh,
the
property
rental
costs.
Cost for the property.
Yes. So, wonderful question. I can answer that, but I am limited by law and what I can tell you. And that is because we are in negotiations. The department is in negotiations with Goldbelt to own the right-of-way down from the existing highway right-of-way to the water and the pad on which the rest of the terminal and parking will be on. That is with Goldbelt right now. I can't tell you what the details of that negotiation are, what that number is, because that would be in violation of the Uniform Act set by Congress. And to ever have federal funding, I'm not going to violate that here. So thank you for respecting that.
And my last one, so the state would own the dock itself?
So what I can say is we will own the land through Co-Chair Eichheit, Representative Stutz. We will own the land where the road coming down, the state will.
Right, and
we
the
will
pad.
Own the pad. The water side of things is a lease through DNR. So that is a lease essentially from the state to the department. And what the co-use agreements are basically set up to do is to make sure that the transportation side is taken care of and it doesn't interfere with what the private interest, because I cannot change the fact that Cascade Point is located essentially on private land. That doesn't change. That's a fact. That's not preferential treatment. So I think we need to recognize that.
So, in fact, the state will own the dock directly or indirectly via a lease with the state for the water portion.
Through Co-Chair Eichheit to Representative Stutz. The intent right now, if with next federal steps and if we do federal funding, would be generally to own the lease in the water and to own the dock itself. I say that with just a word of caution because we have a partnership with Gold Belt. There are options out there that could change that to have it do something different. And that it doesn't mean that's where we're headed right now. It doesn't. We're not. There's a project for this in the STIP coming up, and it's been in the STIP, and it's for building it and us owning it. But those negotiations could always be something slightly different. So,
I got Mr. McCabe in the queue after Co-Chair Carrick. I had a yes, Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Anderson. Just to respond, so to provide some clarity for Representative Stutz, through the Co-Chair Eichheit. There's a lot of pressure on the department across the system for these shared dock type arrangements. Valdez, for example, recently approached us because of the tourism industry and the ferry boats or the tour ships. You know, when we were working for some time with Skagway, because that dock was very in a central location, and we were talking about joint right-of-way type agreements so that, you know, the community could also use that for revenue generation along with the ferry system. So this isn't something new in terms of trying to figure out how this could work, you know. And I mean, the dock, you know, you build a dock with federal funding, it's absolutely a public facility. It's DOT owned and managed. It's just that we're trying to figure out next door, how does that work, you know, if you start having multiple uses in one facility. And this is going to continue. I think the pressures continue on us to find ways to do that because it's valuable real estate. And so once you start, and I think one of this is kind of the premise for when you can build something, you know, in this new location, that opportunity for economic, you know, development. Granted, and so this one is mining. There's also been folks that have approached us about potentially a small boat harbor that could serve commercial fishermen, private fishermen at the end of the road would have some real value to that site. So that was another one. And so then, you know, you'd have, it's, you know, mining, fishing, that whole piece to try to see what we could do to support the economics in the state of Alaska for two very important industries.
So I'd like to jump in here, and again, apologies for being a little late, and maybe some of these questions have been asked, but it's Mr. Goins, right? Did I say that right?
Goins, but thank you.
Goins, yeah. Goins. Okay, thank you. Yeah, pronunciation is an issue sometimes. Mr. Goins, I heard you say something that I want to ask a question about. You know, when I was a planner for the Mat-Su Borough, our job on plans was to collect public comments on them. Yeah. And then our job for the policymakers was to summarize those, you know, essentially how many were opposed, how many are for, what kind of questions there were. So it sounds like you've looked at some of these comments based on something you said. You had said, I see a lot of fear in the comments. Is it possible that in those same comments you see opposition to this proposal?
Representative Eichheid, there's no doubt about that. The numbers that are stated by Representative Stutes are accurate. We weren't hiding those. What we were actually doing, and the reason those came out is we got a request from a reporter, and we freely shared them. Our process is to usually not share those until we're getting closer to the environmental document process and posting those. I will say, and I have in my prepared remarks, which I'm going to get off of here, but I think this is a really good point and some of the things that are going on. We believe that this community and the interest and the fear and some of the misinformation, so we wanted to respond to each and every one of those 622 comments individually. And my staff is going through that, and they're working through it. We've sat down with 10, 12 folks in the room and said, what are these things that we need to be addressing? And again, we take them as challenges to our design and our operations and the things that we need to do, and we take that very seriously. I will also say that while we were delivering a record year for South Coast Region, twice what we've done, dealing with the bridge washed out on the back loop, going to the West Coast storm in the middle of the night, flying away, myself personally, and many others. That was the same time we were also coordinating a design-build process that was fairly new to us. So coordinating that design-build team with our environmental team running two different parallel tracks, and our hope was to have a public meetings ahead of the first initial public comment. Between all the busyness, that got missed. We missed that point. So we're going to go, and we're going to fix that. We recognize that we need to do better in that regard, and I take responsibility for that, no doubt in my mind. Just like you, I want to get those comments. I want to hear them. And the first step was we recognized that we were going to have the comment period end in right around the Thanksgiving holiday. So we took an immediate step back and said, you know what, we need to do better. We're going to extend this. That'll give time for people to get better information, because there was a lot of misinformation going around, like Auk Bay going away. Auk Bay is not going away. In fact, we're spending projects and have dollars to repair it, and that gives us redundancy and all sorts of other things. But we wanted to give them time to have those comments come in. So we extended to January 9th. We wanted to get past the holidays for that exact reason. I'm also committing to having two more meetings. Each of these meetings will be in Juneau, Skagway, and Haines in April, starting in April. And we're going to have a initial meeting that is a presentation by the department, and then an open house. And I know there's been issues with open houses or concerns with open houses, but I need both sides to be able to tell me and feel comfortable telling me what their concerns are and to ask questions. And if they can't do that in a safe setting because there's chanting and other things going on, I can't hear all parties, and I can't design for the community for all to have that equity piece true and center. So that's the first step. The second step is we're going to give that opportunity to listen. So we're going to have another set of meetings in all three of those communities where we're going to do public hearings. And my staff is going to sit there, and we are going to listen to what people have to say. And because we want them to be able to put that on the record, that is fair and that is just. And I think this project, of all the projects, needs that process. We've also been confronted with, you're not reaching out. You're not doing your thing. You're not reaching out to the tribes. In fact, one of the tribal members was sitting here on Tuesday of last week, and I just got to say that we're not even at that process. I think a lot of people got afraid because we hired a contractor to do a design-build process. That doesn't mean that the design and the engineering and the permitting and the consultation that comes with that process is ignored. It is not. In fact, we just sent off the permit for the Corps of Engineers for that first phase. Through that, we're working with the Corps to really focus in on who are those agencies, who are those tribes, who are those native corporations that we need to coordinate with on the concerns with biological, cultural, and things like that. So that permit has gone out. We're literally reviewing those letters to begin that process now. And no matter the mechanism, whether that was a design bid build or a design build or a CMGC, we would be at that point today in the design, regardless. And so while people have said and accused us of missing that point, we have not. It's just a different mechanism to deliver, and that design build part, the build part, scares people. Okay. And rightfully so.
Yeah, thank you. That was a long answer. I appreciate your passion. You're very thorough. You don't have to be quite as thorough. But thank you. I want to keep going to Q because there's many questions. So my co-chair, Carrick, please.
Thank you, through the co-chair. I want to thank Director Goins for being here. And also, this discussion today is not meant to, you know, make the South Coast region look terrible. There's so much work that's been really good in South Coast region that we could highlight. And I think you mentioned a couple of those, you know, significant efforts to help stabilize the region. And I want to recognize that first and foremost. But I'm still just trying to wrap my head around the logistics here for this particular project. And we've mentioned Gold Belt and the shuttle a couple of times. So I wanted to ask, has Gold Belt committed in perpetuity to running a shuttle operation? Or what does that part of this look like?
Through the chair to Representative Carrig, Gold Belt has made a commitment to run the shuttle with Cascade Point operating. I believe that was the terminology they exactly used. So.
And I have a couple of follow-ups, if that's all right.
Two follow-ups.
Do they... How long is that commitment for? Or is it just a commitment with no set time frame at this time?
Through the chair to Representative Carrick, I only have that based on the language that was in the letter. Gold Belt would have to answer that question in more detail. I know they run other operations out there with bus service, and they are committed. I've heard their CEO speak on the record that they want to see this go through, not just because of their private interests, but because of their shareholders. And the same folks that we've heard here being talked about, the elderly person who is at the end of the road, that's exactly the same reason that he has stated why he is interested in this project, is making that better for those that are a part of his corporation and shareholders and make life easier for them. So I think they are committed long term.
And I guess I have just a follow-up comment, Co-Chair Eichheid. So again, Director Goins, I want to thank South Coast Region and the work you do for everything that serves our South Coast communities, first and foremost. But on this project in particular, it feels very strongly to me like what's really happening is Gold Belt is the primary beneficiary of a project that the state is going to utilize federal dollars to support. And there's an indeterminate impact for maintenance and operations for the state of this project. And there's an indeterminate impact on the communities that are going to be served by the project. And we talked about equity today. And equity, in my mind, when you're the State Department of Transportation, is not how do we balance corporate interests with public interests. This is the Alaska Marine Highway System and the Department of Transportation. Equity is about equity for the communities who have spoken in opposition to this project because they're worried about equity mm-hmm. for their own communities. And so I guess that's the rub here. And I am not convinced that this is where the state should be stepping into what it feels to me like subsidizing corporate interest. And, you know, I understand the department has a different perspective, but I sort of stand by it from what I'm hearing.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Eichheid. Seems to me we had this conversation 2 years ago when we were talking about, and Commissioner Anderson, you're on the Alaska Railroad Board, so let's talk about Seward and the big corporation that is benefiting from the Seward dock and the amount of money that the Alaska Railroad has committed and the state has committed to a big corporation to subsidize their use of a state, essentially a state dock that we also put in to have the ferry operate out of if we needed to. So kind of you kind of glossed over that, but I mean, isn't it sort of the same thing as far as corporate interests are concerned? And also I heard another comment, and I think I'm wearing out my welcome with the chair, so I'm going to jam all this in there really quick. Are we ever going to recover the capital costs of the build out in Chiniga to Titlick and Cold Bay? To me, that would we talked about capital costs and recovering those. I don't think the ferry system, we've said that before, the ferry system is not in the business of recovering capital costs and making a profit. The ferry business is in the business. The ferry system is in the business of serving our public the best, easiest, fastest, and cheapest way we can, knowing that it's going to cost us money. So that's kind of a comment. You can correct me. if I'm wrong. And can you maybe comment on the Seward thing with the Royal Caribbean and the big corporate interest? And maybe Gold Belt's a native corporation, right? Shouldn't we be supporting those?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Aishad, Representative McCabe. Yeah, from the DOT perspective, so from the railroad perspective, on the Seward dock, I mean, I think everyone recognizes the value to Seward, the value to the system, the increase, the economic development with something like that. I mean, that's important as a state, even as a state government official, that we understand what the private sector does for our economy in Alaska. I think that's And so we run into this a lot. I mean, another example I would just throw out there, because Representative Carrick is very familiar with this one, would be the Manh Choh Hall. And again, we as a DOT, we have to make sure that we're accommodating the demand. In that particular instance, I mean, everybody is following the laws and regulations, and there's a new vehicle on the road. So we have to invest to make sure that we're taking care of that. I personally on that one went out to Toke this past year, and yeah, everybody's working for the mine. I mean, it's like those are the jobs. This is like this economic development piece, I think, is big. As a DOT, we definitely have parameters that we work within, but we are engaged with industry, because whether it's the fishing industry, the mining industry, the cruise ship industry, that's kind of what drives Alaska's economy. So, we understand, and like Director Goins understands where those boundaries are. We have attorneys that, if we feel like boundaries are getting crossed, we consult, make sure everything's square. So that's, we're very cognizant of that. We've been through a lot of trials and tribulations. I have a lot of staff that are veterans, of scrutiny, of, taking a lot of scrutiny on these things, and we continue on. So, yeah, I think it kind of goes back to, we have that state statutory purpose that we put up in a lot of the front of our presentations. And, the welfare of Alaska, the extraction of resources, those are all what the statutes say, DOT should be doing. So,
Representative Mina.
I'm good. Thank
you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This specific run that we're talking about, again, from Cascade Point, just that run in general between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway, what's the unconstrained demand for vehicles daily or annually in this loop? And then the second question is, like, what percentage of vehicles that are transported by the entire ferry system are served in this loop? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Through Co-Chair Aishad, Representative Nelson, Christopher Goins for the record. I'll probably get the numbers wrong as far as the passengers, but I can tell you this: 3/5 of all passengers on the AMHS system, 3/5, so that includes all the way out in the chain, all the way down to Ketchikan, 3/5 are traveling this Northern Lynn Canal route. So it's a majority of the operations are here. And ridership is here on this route that we're talking about that Cascade Point directly affects.
One quick follow-up. So is there – I'm sure that there is a feasibility study that was done on this project. And
don't be so sure.
Well, I'm assuming. And as I'm just trying to, get my head wrapped around this stuff, is there a feasibility study – that had like a cost-benefit analysis for Cascade Point, and have you done that with the other projects that have been mentioned that we can, like, I can do a comparison with? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Again, through Co-Chair Aishad to Representative Nelson, it was an economic analysis that was run by Ed King.
Okay.
Yeah, that's who did it. And I can give you some more detail if you want that. But if the other question, and I'll go to that one first because I think that's the easier one, is was there feasibility studies, say, run on Chiniga, Tituluk, Cordova, Cold Bay, Skagway? I don't know of one ever. One of the things that, as I was talking to Ed King and working through that value of information on pros and cons on both sides was, public work projects – are unique, and they're not just straightforward financial return analysis assessments. These projects require balancing public expenditures with service outcomes. Each of the projects' interested parties holds differing value metrics and potential outcomes, often compounded by that uncertainty. And when we're conducting that value information, which is what essentially the analysis was, it provided that baseline understanding of what information was potentially needed to continue forward or not. That economic analysis he likened to a public bridge. And we do not evaluate those bridges based on the tolls and repaying those costs. Name one bridge in the state where we've done that. It's not there. We evaluate it on whether it improves reliability, reduces system friction, enhances safety and health, and creates that public value over time. And that's what we saw on Cascade Point, and that's what the duly elected leaders have asked us to continue to move forward with. So,
okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Stutes.
Oh, thank you, Co-Chair Eichheit. First, let me say the difference between Cascade Point and Seward was the whole community of Seward, the city, every surrounding community was in support of the project, totally, which is not the case here. And Mr. Goins, I really appreciate you. I really appreciate all you've done. You've come to Kodiak. I've worked with you very successfully, and I know you're a hard worker, and I'm going to try and say everything nice I can about you before I say the fox is already in the hen house. You're talking about having all this public outreach, and we've got, what, $30 million invested? The fox is in the hen house, Mr. Goins, and that doesn't speak very well for DOT, in my opinion.
Okay, no comment.
I can comment if you would like, Co-Chair. I got five slides of time frame that start in 1994 with the development of this project and political leaders starting back at that point in this community, including some folks that we could go into.
Well, I'd like to keep going through the queue. Representative McCabe.
So, thanks, Chair Eichheit. Are we going to move on in the slides? Because I'd like there's a slide coming up that I'd like to highlight for the public, frankly, that I think is important. So I can hold my question if you guys want to move through the slides. Or
you are the last person in the queue, I believe, at the moment. So, but Representative Carrick is now in the queue as well, so I don't know if you want to save it.
She's way more important than me, so she could go ahead and I'll save it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Carrick.
Representative McCabe. I just really quick through the co-chair. You just mentioned, Director Goins, that duly elected leaders have supported this project, and I know on a long-term scale that there has been support that maybe we're going to talk about today in the slides, but What recent elected leaders have supported this project and through that local consultation?
Well, through our co-chair, Representative Carrick, I think the one who gets to make a lot of these decisions on our end is the governor, and he was duly elected to make those decisions and guide and appoint the people that are sitting in front of you. And so when I say duly elected as part of this administration, it is the governor.
Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, and then can we move on?
Sure.
Yeah, and just a time check. We have 19 minutes left, so I might try to move us along a little faster. So, thank you. Go ahead.
So this slide is talking about the revenue, and I'm just going to very much summarize and kind of get off my prepared statements. But essentially, this was presented from Ed King's report, and it talked about total efficiency gains. And he supplied a range because in all these scenarios, we don't have fix things that we're dealing with. We're playing with scenarios, and so that mean, and that's kind of where I'm going to stay, is if total efficiency gains from fuel reduction and other things to $933,000. We have additional facility costs and commitments and responsibilities that come along with this, with having that terminal. That's about $480,000. And then the revenue change. And this was projected using some national studies that when you shorten time, you get a addition of operating passengers that come on. And so that was about 5%, equal to about $136,000. So you add all those together, you get that $590,000 benefit from the financials.
Representative McCabe.
Okay, now we're at my favorite slide here. This is the environmental benefits of the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal. So I see this net reduction of 1,190 metric tons of CO2 for Cascade Point Ferry Terminal. That should be significant to anybody that is concerned about our environment, I would think. 133,883 gallons of gasoline should also be significant to somebody who is interested in reducing our use of fossil fuels. And I also see a future ready for electrification. I assume that means an electric ferry, because now we can run the ferry shorter distances, so we could maybe design a battery-powered electric ferry. I don't think I really have a question here, other than maybe are we talking about a year, 133,883 gallons of gasoline a year, or is this over the lifetime? I think this is significant to highlight for folks that are concerned about our environment.
Through Co-Chair Eichscheid to Representative McCabe, Christopher Goins for the record, that is per year. We'd be taking 133,883 gallons off, or essentially 250 vehicles off the road per year by running out of Cascade Point.
Wow. Thank you.
And did you want to say anything else about this slide? Because I think Rep. McCabe's basically summarized it for you. But
yeah, Representative McCabe did represent it for me for the most part. I do want to talk about briefly the $1.3 million contract that was signed with Juno Hydropower. They presented an ability to potentially tie into electrical power for electrification of the site. And they were running a cable across Berners Bay anyways. So that contract, to take advantage of the construction that they were planning, purchased essentially a Y or a plug-in in that line off to the side. That's all it did. It didn't buy the line going across the Cascade Point, but it bought the plug-in. And it also bought the engineering to understand what those costs and what would need to be installed if electrification was ever to. So this is really a due diligence move. To make sure that we didn't have additional expenses later on trying to tie into that power line at a different time when permits that are already acquired by Juno Hydropower would no longer be in place.
And then I have a question. I guess, there's some numbers, last couple slides being thrown about, I've heard the word economic analysis, Mr. King's report. Do any of these... Are any of these considered a formal cost-benefit analysis? And the reason I ask that is, there are some goods here on this side. There's a public good. And economists are really good at putting values on that. And, like, for instance, we've talked in the past about what is a statistical life, human life worth. Yeah. And we know that number. Economists have defined that. So is there a technical cost-benefit analysis that's been done on this project, or are these just economic analysis? So it's a nuanced question.
Great question, Representative Eichscheid. I would say, yes, it's from an economic standpoint. He's an economist. He's running an economic analysis to the best of his ability with the data that's there. And even Ed referred to it as a value of information. And he took the pros and the cons of both sides out there and was trying to weigh that. And I will say the weaknesses that Ed has, we cover in other areas. Ed is not an archaeologist. He is not a cultural specialist. He is not a biologist. All those types of things that we look at are going to be looked at in much more detail as we head through the core permitting process, as we coordinate with those experts and those people that it matters to most, such as the tribes. And we're going to be stepping through that to value those other things in the community to see where this goes. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I, with all due respect, I'm not an economist, but I have had economics, and I do actually. I've used cost benefit analysis in my work with Matsuburo when it came to fisheries. From my understanding, this is an economic analysis. It's different. So, for my untrained eyes, I would beg to differ. But I just wanted to get that on the record. So,
sure.
Yes,
yeah, sure. Commissioner Reichheit. Yeah, I think what you're getting, maybe what you're getting at is, from a policy perspective, we don't have a policy of doing cost-benefit analysis for whenever we do an investment in a ferry terminal. If that's something that this committee would like us to consider, I think we could. But that would be something we'd look for that guidance, from a letter or something. But at this time, when we're investing in a whatever ferry terminal is across the state, we don't have a policy. So to do it as a – we did the Ed King report as a because they requested – AMHOB requested that economic analysis. So we went ahead and we did that thinking that, that was something to satisfy that request. But it's not our policy. So but if people are interested in that policy, I'm interested in those things. So I'm happy to hear from the committee on that.
I appreciate that context. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think that it probably would have carried a little bit more weight if the report had been done by someone independent of this body or of this building, and that's not the case with Ed King. And so, of course, there's a slight taint on the vision when you look at that report, and so it could have had a little more validity to it had it been an independent opinion.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, co-chair, I should, Representative Stutes. Yeah, I mean, Ed King had a master's degree in applied economics from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. What we haven't seen really from the criticism is those specifics that in the report that people would like to see further analysis done. We'd be open to that. If there's specifics in that report where people say, hey, those aren't the right numbers or those are things that don't look right, we're happy to review those, and we can do that independently. That would be fine. But, yeah, that would be the response, yeah.
Can then I just my follow-up? I'm sorry, did I cut you off, sir?
Oh, I just ahead. Wanted to add one thing, Representative Eichheit, to Stutes. That analysis by Ed, and I had him in my office, and I told Ed, I said, I want a government report that is fair as possible, and he agreed to that. Now, that said, I've had both people, both pro and against Cascade, come into my office. Some are sitting in this building behind me, and who have said this report is not good enough for my pro or my con idea, which tells me we've kind of landed in a middle. Because we're getting criticism on both sides not being enough to theirs. So I just want to mention that.
Appreciate that. And then just, the protocol, just say Rep. Stutes or Representative Stutes, either one. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then I just, my question kind of related to Representative Stutes' question is, was the contract for to Mr. King, was that a no-bid contract, or was that let out for bid and he was a winning bidder?
Representative Eichheit, we followed our procurement policies to stay under the $20,000 limit to get a sense, and again, a value. We wanted to understand where did we need to explore further to see if we needed to spend more money, and he gave us an ability to see that with that value of information analysis that was under $20,000 thresholds, so it was able to be single-sourced.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And Representative Carrick, and is there anyone else in the queue? Okay, thank you.
So two questions, I think, through the chair. So what was the cost for the Ed King analysis?
through co-chair Eichheid to Representative Carrick. The total cost came to about $15,000. The first draft was cheaper than that, and then we had a lot of questions back and forth and looking at, and we did take that pause to look at the walk-on passenger portions of it and to re-examine that, so we had a little extra work that we asked them to do after we found where that was. So,
okay, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So $15,000 is kind of peanuts in state government terms, but I just want to note that the analysis has quite a number of inaccuracies and links that go to nowhere. For example, there's 5 inline citations on pages 17, 19, and 25 of the report that don't link to any data sources. There's a couple of other areas where when you click a link in a citation, it says query not found once you've clicked that. So for $15,000, we didn't seem to get much other than just such a general letter of support. And I know that the department has stated previously that we're using AI technology to help write things. I'm not necessarily saying that's wholesale terrible, but the report feels to me like an AI-generated letter of support for this project. And I really do want to echo Representative Stute's comments that it doesn't feel like an independent study to me. And the deeper you dig in that, the more that feels true, because when you reference studies that are then not accessible, it feels more that that's the case.
Representative Garrick, through co-chair Eichheid, we'll find a way to correct those links. I'm not concerned about that. I believe he was trying to represent this well, and I can tell you each one of those points that were on that were heavily debated and challenged in our discussions through this process. So I don't, knowing Ed and his intellect, I think he would object to that comment. So.
Okay. And I just would note, as a very quick follow-up comment, this committee has invited Mr. King to join us, and he's not indicated that he is able to come before the committee. So I just wanted to note that.
And for the record, we are at 2:54, and at 2:58, I'm going to start the transition to our 3 o'clock end date. So.
So this slide, this project works because it aligns state transportation responsibilities with private land ownership. Cascade Point sits on land owned by Gold Belt, an urban Alaska Native corporation. Rather than treating that as a constraint, the state structured a formal partnership to ensure clear roles, accountability, and long-term certainty. The partnership is documented through a March 2023 Memorandum of Understanding that's signed with the governor. Going forward, DOTMPF is responsible for public marine transportation infrastructure. Gold Belt retains control of its land for any planned non-state development. Gold Belt is not dictating public transportation decisions, but merely ensuring those decisions are compatible with the core plans outside of the proposed right-of-way. Each party stays within its core mission, and Gold Belt is responsible to permit their land activities themselves. State investment is limited to ferry terminal and related public infrastructure. Gold Belt may pursue commercial and industrial development independently if and when their market conditions justify it. That development is not a prerequisite for the ferry terminal and does not rely on state funding. Gold Belt's ownership and cooperative support avoids fragmented development and ensures that infrastructure investment respects Alaska Native land ownership and preserves their desires to have a multifunctional and dual-use port. We recognize that Cascade Point is outside Juneau's existing transit network, and this possibly makes life challenging for walk-on passengers. And to address this, Gold Belt proactively committed to providing a dedicated shuttle connecting the Mininal Valley to Ok Bay and Cascade Point. That commitment solves a broken link for Cascade Point that currently exists at Ok Bay. This also presents the opportunity for potential federal funding, which we've talked about before, that could lower those costs of transport. So this is a structured partnership that enables the project, retains the ability of Gold Belt to develop commercial and industrial opportunities, respects native land ownership, and closes access gaps that would otherwise limit the terminal's usefulness for those most vulnerable to the fact that the terminal is further from town at Cascade Point.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Eichheid. So it says a dual port or dual use port. I presume that when the ferry's not there that Gold Belt will have use of that facility, the ferry docks. Is that correct?
Through co-chair IHID to Representative Stutes. The way the port is being designed is our ferry terminal is going to be only used by our boats. There are other opportunities on the backside of the wave barrier where they can put a small boat harbor. And there are opportunities on the front side of that wave barrier where they could have other port operations that would not conflict with our vessel docking or leaving the site.
Follow up. Thank you. So would that be connected to the ferry dock? Portion?
Yeah, so there's a land portion that represented through co-chair Aishai to Representative Stutes. There is a connecting road that comes from the terminal pad and parking pad and building, and that connecting part breaks off and goes to the left if you're driving down it to our ferry terminal. Any operations that Gold Belt would have to be expanded to the right at their own expense. Only that kind of narrow passageway would be the dual-use portion for the driving portions of this facility.
And that would be on the land?
Yeah, the land chair. And some of the things that would expand to be on that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. It is now past 2:58.
Sorry.
I would just like to say it's obvious that this is an issue of great interest. And I really want to thank Commissioner Ryan and Mr. Goins for being here and taking your time. And, you know, some tough questions, but we appreciate you for being here. Okay.
Want to come back?
just for the record, we do have some more slides. So that's going to inform this next part. So we're going to recess this meeting today to Thursday, February 12th at 12:30 p.m. So that's a little bit different. And please note, on Thursday, it's a earlier than the usual start time of 1, so 12:30 p.m. And that's to allow Thursday's invited testifiers to join us before they are due in the Senate Transportation Committee. So with no further discussion, this meeting is recessed at 2:59 until PM right now until Thursday, February 12th at 12:30 p.m.